Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to episode 30 of the Runner's World podcast, the weekly podcast bringing you all the latest running news, views and interviews. I'm Rick Pearson, the Runner's World section editor, and I'm here with Ben Hobson, the digital editor. Ben, what have we got coming up on this episode?
This week we're discussing the upcoming Ultra Trail de Mont Blanc with GB runner and coach Robbie Britton. Robbie is now based out in Chamonix where the UTMB takes place and completed the race back in 2012. With the UTMB taking place next weekend, we thought it would be the ideal time to chat with Robbie and get a sense of why this race is so special.
Yeah, super excited about the UTMB. Went over on a press trip, which is kind of the ultimate press trip.
It's the best one.
Yeah, a few years back. And I think I'd harboured hopes of doing the UTMB at some point. And I was like,
that's not a shock.
And actually, I came back from that thinking, I will never, ever do this race. It is unbelievably difficult.
It's really funny when you see a race that you kind of think, like, you see a highlight clip that's like,
sure,
2 minutes long and it's all glorified and everyone's like goating up little mountain runs and being all like bouncy and everything, and you're like, oh yeah, I could definitely,
I
on
could
a good
do that.
Day I could actually crush this. And then you see it and you're like, oh, that looks horrible.
Yeah, there's a lot of broken people walking it into Chamonix, but fair play to anyone who does it, and more people are signing up to the UTMB. So we want to hear from Robbie about the appeal of the race, how you train for the race, and also what this year's lineup is looking like. So without further ado, we want to welcome our guest of the week.
Guest of the week, here in the studio, guest of the week, sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
Our guest this week is GB ultra runner and coach Robbie Britton. Robbie's running CV includes third place at the World 24 Hour Championships in 2015, when he ran 162 miles in 24 hours. Alongside this have been wins at the Wicklow Way Race and FKTs along the Jordan Trail. He also found time to run a 2:29 marathon in Valencia last December. Based out in Chamonix, Robbie is perfectly placed to cast his eye over this week's UTMB, and we're delighted to be joined by him now. So Robbie, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me.
No, it's great to have you on. So for those who don't know, what exactly is the UTMB?
UTMB, it's a race around the Tour de Mont Blanc. It's 105 miles and it goes all around Western Europe's highest mountain, Mont Blanc. It's walked by thousands of people every year, but the race itself is just at the end of August, beginning of September every year, and it's just the biggest event in the ultra trail world.
It's sort of always regularly ranked out as one of the toughest. What makes the UTMB such a tough nut to crack?
You know what makes the UTMB tough? Getting in an entry into the race. That's the hardest thing about it for most people. It's massively oversubscribed because of what it is. It's a journey rather than a one-off event. You've got to earn points to get into the race. You've got to build up experience over years. When you actually get to race day, I think there's a reasonably high completion rate. You get just under 2 days to complete the full 105-mile distance. And if you move well, eat well, drink well, and don't smash yourself on the downhills, I wouldn't list it as the toughest, but it's one of the most revered on people's bucket list.
I mean, I know that you've completed this, Robbie, and you're out in Chamonix now, and obviously that's a perfect training ground for something like UTMB. But am I right in thinking that you trained for this race while you were based in London? Is that right?
Yeah, I trained for it. I can't remember what year it was, but one of the times, 2008, two times I've done it, I've trained once near Box Hill, once in Sussex near the South Downs.
Right.
And it involved a lot of up and down the same tarmac bit of road.
And is that the key for training for an event like this? It's getting the kind of the vertical elevation in?
People get a little bit carried away with just, let's say, chasing vert and just trying to get as many vertical meters in their training as possible.
Yeah.
Whilst you want to make it as specific to your goal event as you can, it's not just about the numbers. One of the things that people struggle with at UTMB is the length of the descents. You're looking at going 1,000, 1,200 metres downhill in one go over a long distance. And you've got to, yes, you can prepare the muscles for it, but also it's about trying to be efficient. And that's one of the biggest gains people can have is in their own training, looking at how they run downhill and thinking about it. Everyone does it slightly differently. I could give you some tips, like keep your head up, looking ahead, trying to use like fast feet, picking a nice line down the mountain. But in reality, as long as you're thinking about it, when you get out on those hill runs and long runs, try and think about your efficiency going downhill. And that's, for me, key. Going uphill, the fitter you are, the quicker you get up there. It never gets easy. Going downhill, if you're inefficient or if you break too often, and you just smash it, those quads on the way down, that's what ends people's races. Uphill, you just get slower and slower. It gets harder and harder. But downhill can become impossible.
Mm. This is a complete interlude, but I was looking at the results from Pikes Peak.
Yeah.
And Jaunet won, and his ascent was 2 hours and 20, and his descent was like an hour and 20. And it's just phenomenal. And I watched a little video on it as well. And as you say, like the fast feet bit is just, he's just, you know, he's picking his line 20 feet ahead of him, and he's just like head up, hopping down the...
Yeah, he makes it look easy, doesn't he?
I think one of the reasons Jaunet is so good at the Ultra Trail is because whilst the rest of us are racing hard downhill to keep up with him, it's like he's on either like freewheeling on a bike.
Yeah,
he's literally, he's going fast, but it's so efficient. It's so little effort for him. To everyone else, like a lot of the Americans in the past tried to keep up with him, and they're better than him uphill.
Mm.
And then when they get to the downhill, they're going at the same speed, but it's not like they're working. And he's just gliding downhill.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. You mentioned earlier on that the journey to UTMB does take years. How does someone start their own journey? How would you recommend someone begins that process?
I mean, just step into the world of ultra running. Mm. Try your first ultra race is the first one. You can see from the UTMB website that which races have points and you earn a set amount of points to get into. So there's not just the UTMB race you've got. The shortest is the MCC, which is 42K. Then you've got the OCC, which is 57K. And you step up to the CCC, which is 101K. The TDS is now 140, I believe, and then UTMB itself. So you can start on the ladder with some UK-based races. There's a lot of, like, the Centurion ones in the southeast of England. They provide UTMB points. But I wholly recommend getting out and trying some mountain races or even up in the lakes or Scotland, because whilst you can earn enough UTMB points on the Thames path, it's not the best place to fill all your experience.
Yeah, fair enough. UTMB has been called, you know, it's like the World Cup of mountain running. What is it about the race, do you think, that makes it so special, Robbie?
It's the competition level.
Hmm.
It's everyone who's anyone turns up. Like even now, I was looking through today just to do my homework on some of the elites, and the lists are huge. It's bigger than any other race. I'd say on the trails, even like Sierra Zanar, which Jaunet won a few weeks ago, that's one of the most stacked races in mountain running. It's part of the Mountain Running World Cup, but it's still not as deep as the UTMB races. You look at, and it's not just the UTMB, all the sister races are completely stacked. And unless you're like national level, like top national level, you're not even making it onto the favourites list.
So off the back of that, who do you think is to figure highly in the field this year? Let's go female field to begin with.
I was going to go female.
Oh, fantastic.
We should do. So the females race is really interesting. The UTMB and the CCC are the two strongest.
Yeah.
You've got the likes of Courtney DeWalter, who's won Western States in the past.
Yeah.
It's one of the American favourites, although she has been struggling with a hip injury this summer from Western States. So I'd love to see her do well, and she's got the ability to, but it'd be interesting to see how much her training's been interrupted by that.
Yeah.
And then you've got Miao Yao. I'm not sure if that's pronounced correctly.
Yeah.
She's a Chinese runner who's burst onto the scene on the Ultra Trail World Tour in the last couple of years, and she will go out hard, will make an exciting race.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine, Mimi Kotka, who's a Swedish runner, she's one of the favourites. Again, she's a really strong runner. It'd be really nice to see her do well. And then you drop down, I think, Beth Pascal. She's a British runner.
Yeah.
She was, I think, fifth or fourth last year. I want to say fourth. And I think she could. She's been training really well. She had a really good run at Western State. She's been out in the mountains this summer. I would love to see Beth go better than fourth, and I think she can. I definitely think she can.
Well, let's cast our attention then to the male field, Robbie. Who do you think is going to figure there, and any British hopefuls there too?
Oof. So the men's race, I think there's going to be four people who go off the front.
Right.
Zach Miller is known for just going wild at the start of every race. He races. Yeah. People love watching it. I feel like I'm getting old because I want to just take him aside and have a quiet word. So they mate, just ease back a bit on that.
It's a long way, Zach. Come on, Zach.
But it's how he races. It's how he feels he's going to get the best result.
Yeah.
And he's been out in he's not done as many laps of the UTMB in training this year.
Yep.
But he's been out in the mountains racing everyone in training. And you've got with him, you've got Pau Capel, who's a very, very good Spanish runner. Mm. Hayden Hawks, an American runner.
Mm.
And Min Kui, another Chinese runner.
Yeah.
So Min Kui goes out hard as well. Pau is a racer, and he won't let I get the feeling he won't let anyone go too far ahead of him. Mm. And Hayden, again, is just, he's a 13:54 5K runner.
Yeah,
and I know that's
wow.
not a 5K race, but that's, when you look at someone's raw speed, it shows their potential over these distances. And he's won races like Lavaredo.
Right. Yeah, big, long mountainous races, right? Yeah.
Yes. But it doesn't always come from the front four or the front people to win these races, because we've seen in many years it falls apart for a lot of people. So you've got multiple winners, Javier Thévenard, who won last year. You could never count that guy out. He will probably race a bit more conservatively. Look for him in the second half.
Yeah.
Same with Tim Tollefson, who's hit third place here a couple of times. I get it from his impression. He feels like he deserves a win here.
Right.
But you don't get what you deserve at UTMB. You're about making the boat most of it on the day.
Yeah.
And British hopefuls. We've got Tom Owens is probably our best runner in the field. It's his first 100-miler. He's a lovely bloke. He's out camping out in the Chamonix Valley, getting ready for the race.
Yeah.
You've got Andy Simmons, who's also won Lavaredo in the past. Harry Jones has been eating up mountains for breakfast over the last few months. Paul Giblin's here for the fourth or fifth year running.
Mm.
And we've got Carl Gregg, who's another Scottish runner who had a really good 100K earlier in the year. He's been out in the mountains. So those are the guys that you were, if they have a great day, like Tom and Andy could be well into the top 10. I think all of those boys could be top 20. And again, it does, look at Damien Hall last year. He was fifth.
Yeah.
And that's, all credit to Damien, he worked his socks off and kept at it. But it just shows that if you have a strong race and you race within yourself, you can climb up that field in the last stages.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Let's talk about Chamonix on race week, Robbie. What's it like? Presumably, the world of racing is coming to a fairly small town in the Alps. What's it like to be there?
I always remember the first time I come to Chamonix.
Yeah.
Back, I think it was 2012. I said to me, I was there with my mum. Obviously, you go to these big races with your mum, don't you? And I said to her, I feel like I belong. Like, normally you head to a race in any ultra and you kind of, no one knows what you're doing. You're just in the middle of nowhere and you're looking for a bit of tape that's the start line. UTMB, the second you get there, you know you're at the home of ultra trail running. Yeah. You're just everyone's in Lycra. It's disgusting. it's just, people are in full race kit from the day they get out there, just in case.
So many calf sleeves.
Starts early. it's really buzzing. It can get a bit much for some people. I've seen people leave their best performance at the expo, and then come to race day and their legs are completely dead because they've done 19 laps and bought 17 new pairs of compression.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're compressing anymore.
Yeah, it's arms now, isn't it? You've got to compress your arms, Robbie. You're no one if you're not wearing those arm sleeves. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine are like twiglets anyway. It's useless. Why are they compressing even more?
This is a slightly different part of trail running, but I think it's important that we discuss it. Yeah. You know, there's been this high-profile doping scandal, you know, with Christian Coleman, like sort of latest in sort of track and field. Do you think that trail running is doing enough to root out athletes that are competing against the rules?
Are we doing enough? No, we're not. We're not doing enough. Mm. But what to do enough? Where's the money for that going to come from? I suppose is the question. It's not a huge sport.
Yeah.
The problem I have with in our sport is that we have ITRA, who's like a self-imposed governing body, and they've set up the courts program, and this is it's insufficient massively.
Right.
But it gives people the feeling that something's being done. So it's almost like it's best, it's bad. It's like a PR set up.
Okay.
It's organised by some of the sponsors. It gives the impression we're doing a lot, and in reality, it's not doing anything at all. They monitor health of the athletes, which I think is a good thing, because if there's a lot of people in our sport that are burning out, doing too much, and just not taking the rest they need.
Yeah.
But it's not anti-doping, so we don't really do anything. There is some testing at the end of races, but it's often overlooked.
Mm.
And so I think, yeah, we are. We do need to do more. What that is, I don't know. If I wish I had a solution for it or a big old pot of money,
yeah,
and to provide out of competition testing. I know that people are completing clean and finishing in the top 10 and winning these races.
Yeah,
that's people I know, and I'm confident. I mean, you can't know 100%.
Yeah,
but there's enough confidence there. And one, because it's not just a physical thing. It's not like oh, we've plugged in the numbers. This is how fit you are. Now you're going to win. There's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that does give you a bit of confidence. There's still the scope as an ultra trail runner to improve yourself. I know that I can get better and get closer to the front of these races merely by working on the key parts of training and dedicating myself to my sport. I know there's big gaps and jumps that I can make without doping.
Yeah.
I know there's, like, I've got a personal experience of what's required, and things that I'm not doing that I know that others are, that are just good, solid, hard work and dedication.
Yeah. Well, Robbie, let's talk about your own running then. Just finally, what's what you're coming up? You've done a really decent road marathon. You do the 24-hour stuff. You're good in the mountains. I mean, you're able to do it all. But what's the focus for the rest of the year?
All right, so I was supposed to be doing a 100-mile track race in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah,
but I unfortunately picked up an injury over the summer.
Right.
So I have been cycling a lot. And I've found there's a race called the Trans-Pyrenees. It's 1,500 kilometres across the Pyrenees and then back again on a road bike. And you've got to do it self-supported and in like 5 or 6 days.
Cool.
So I'm aiming for that at the moment. I haven't really told anyone. I've told my mum and the wife knows. And then hopefully this injury I've got, which is just a bit of an imbalance in my right leg, which is causing the quads to do a lot more work than they want to. I'm aiming to go out to Desert Solstice for another 24-hour race.
Cool.
Nice.
Well, that's great. Well, Roy, best of luck on the bike and on the track. And thanks very much for joining us on the Run As Well podcast to talk a bit more about the UTMB.
Cheers, Robbie.
No worries. Thanks.
Cheers, Robbie. Thanks, mate.
Bye.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ah, back once again for his monthly update. Kieran Alger has joined us in the studio, but before we speak to him, we might as well listen to his jingle.
Yes. We're talking tech with Kieran Alger.
Talking tech.
He's an awesome ultra runner.
Talking tech.
Talking tech. He's very charming.
Talking tech.
Knows his polar from his Garmin.
Talking tech.
Kieran,
hello.
Thanks for coming in. You look well rested.
I've been.
How's your sleep going?
It's been going excellently.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
Yeah. I've, according to my stats, I'm tip top shape now. Perfect. Nailed it. Sleep done.
Really?
Be on to something else next. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I have, as we know, been spending the last kind of month testing sleep, trying to improve it, and basically going through all of the sleep hygiene recommendations that people give us, those little tips to help us sleep better, and using some fantastic technology to track how effective those are. And it's been mixed results, actually. I mean, although you've complimented me on how well I look, I think that's more the sunshine. So I wanted to basically see how these things could work. And I rolled through, in some kind of scientific kind of process and order, a lot of things. So shall I just take you through those things that I did?
Take us through what you did.
And how they worked. So the first one was caffeine. The idea was to cut out caffeine out of my diet and see how that impacted. I failed miserably on that after about 2 days because I'm a journalist and I realized that I cannot work and survive without it.
Right.
So, sorry, listeners, but caffeine is still in the mix.
Jury's out on coffee, fair enough.
Jury's out on coffee. So then there's another period of mindfulness. This was one of the ones I was looking forward to testing. And I used a headset called Muse. It's a brainwave sensing headset that can, and breathing and heart rate that can help you train yourself to basically meditate.
Right.
So I used that for 15 minutes, an hour before bedtime. And that one actually was a real benefit. I found it really, really calming, and it really helped with my ability to kind of drop off to sleep quicker. Yeah. It put me into a state where actually when I went to bed, I was really ready to fall asleep. So that's a big thumbs up for the mindfulness. Taking a hot bath. This is not been having a hot bath every night like that since I was about 2 years old. I didn't really find that it helped that much.
Yeah.
It was, you know, a lot of these things, they have to fit into your habits as well.
Yeah.
Made me smell much nicer. But actually, I think that the idea here with a hot bath is that you create a differential in your body temperature. When your body temperature needs to drop in order for you to fall to sleep.
Yep.
So tricking that is essentially what you're trying to do.
Right.
But I found I was just too hot. And
scented candles? Or?
Sometimes. Rose petals a few times, but, you know, not necessarily a winner. And then this is the biggie that everyone will kind of know about, and it's one that's talked about a lot in the media, but that's no phone. And this really worked for me. So my approach was I left the phone on charge in the kitchen, and I fell asleep on average much quicker.
Right.
As a result, the trackers showed that my time from jumping into bed to dropping off was reduced.
Mm.
I also, interestingly, I woke up far more easily, and I didn't need an alarm.
Wow.
So after doing this for a week, I rolled into a pattern of waking up with a light. So I wouldn't have blackout blinds. I left the light to wake me up.
Right.
And I was more instantly kind of alert and able to get out of bed at that point. So the other thing that really worked was going to bed at the same time.
Yeah.
So ruthlessly going to bed at 10 o'clock.
Right.
Which, you know, rock and roll. I'm a dad. I've got a 4-year-old, so that's pretty late for me anyway.
Yeah.
And that got my falling asleep times down from around 20 minutes once I'm in bed to under 10 minutes. So that combined with not having my phone to mess around with really helped. So off and out much, much quicker.
Yeah.
So that combination was really powerful. And another surprising one, they say to avoid eating sugar late at night. And I did that. I've been guilty of sort of having a sweet treat or something, you know, maybe sort of 10 o'clock or whatever, and I cut that out. And that, rather than help me fall asleep quicker, actually meant that I had less interrupted sleep according to the sleep trackers. I had more sleep continuity, so less periods of wakefulness and restlessness during the night. And that's a huge thing. You know, it's not just the amount of sleep you want, but the quality rose as well. I was also hungry. I was less hungry kind of first thing when I woke up.
Right.
So I don't know if it's just me, but I often find if I have chocolate the night before, in the morning I'll wake up and I'll be ravenous, which I presume is to do with my blood sugar levels. That was gone, and that meant from a running perspective, I felt a lot more comfortable going out for early runs.
Mm.
So not only was I awake early enough, I was feeling alert, and I didn't feel like I had to eat necessarily if I wanted to go out for a short run. And that made it easier to be up and out and get training done sooner. So in summary, I'd kind of say that, you know, sleep trackers aren't 100% reliable. Booze, sugar and phones are bad for sleep.
Yeah.
We kind of knew that. going to bed at a good the same time was good. And the biggest win was that it helped me run earlier, and it helped me kind of train more regularly without, you know, getting my immune system battered.
Yeah.
So try it out, people.
Yeah, great tips and great benefits for runners, mate. Yeah.
What else have you got for us, Kieran?
And each month I was going to come in here and bring you a couple of cool bits of tech that I've found.
Yeah, yeah.
And in my pocket, I'm actually going to physically pull it out. I've got more tech. I've got a pair of, I think these are the best headphones that I've seen in a long time. They are the Jaybird Vista. They're a pair of true wireless earbuds.
Right.
They're about the smallest headphones I think you can get on the market right now. The carry case itself is tiny, can fit in a pocket.
Yeah.
You get, there's 16 hours of charge in here, 6 hours in the buds, 10 hours in the case. You can wear one bud at any one time and still hear the music without kind of losing the quality. And I think the best bit is you get an hour's charge for these from 5 minutes on the plug. So if all those moments where you've forgotten to charge your headphones or they're low, you just stick them on, you've got enough time. You'd be messing around at the office before you leave or
Well, the fact the case charges as well is pretty great.
Yeah. And you can fit that'll fit in a pocket, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Anywhere or in a running belt.
Yeah.
So they're good for 16 hours is enough for ultras as well. So they're pretty versatile.
What are they called again?
They're called the Jaybird Vista.
Right.
And they'll cost you about £159. And then I've done something else very different. I've got a skipping rope. It's
It's
called the Tangram Smart Rope. And basically, you know, there's a lot of different things that this smart rope will count your skips, fire it to an app. You can do interval sessions and you can set daily targets and it automatically counts. So it's got LEDs in the rope itself that show you your count in front of your eyes.
That's mad.
Like one of those flick books.
Which is crazy tech.
And why is that important for running? I've looked at this and it's good for strength for the ligaments and the joints, for knees and ankles and toes, all the things you need. It's brilliant for cardio fitness, and it's also, you know, it's a brilliant sort of plyometric exercise that can add power as well.
Yeah.
So you can get as much out of 10 minute skipping as you can out of a half an hour easy run. So if you want to do something slightly different, mix it up a bit, can't leave the house, whatever that might be, it's a really useful piece of tech to have.
Yeah.
I'm rubbish at skipping, but
can you adjust the length of it?
You can't.
Oh, gutted.
No, sorry. It's not that smart.
They've thought of everything apart from tall people. Oh, well.
Sorry, tall people. The final thing, every month I was going to come in with something that was either bothering me or puzzling me about tech.
Yes.
And this one, you know, we all know that all runners are much smarter than everyone else, right?
Good.
Oh, yeah.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah. Loads of science to say that. Well, I think that the world is losing genius all over the place. Because no one has made an app that can track or capture those moments of genius that you have whilst you're running, right? Do you guys, when you're running, do you ever have ideas?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
And then you think, that's such a good idea. I'm never going to forget that.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
4 miles later, it's gone because you've been thinking about something that's rubbing or chafing or you haven't had a gel. And that moment of genius is gone. We need something, all watch brands, apps, we want something that can help us.
You just need a built-in dictaphone in a watch.
Alan Partridge. I want to be able to say to my watch, capture all my great ideas, Alan Partridge style.
Yeah.
And I can come back and not forget them.
So I think that's great.
Voice memo recording on a watch.
That is my challenge to people.
Amazing. Kieran, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And a deluge of tech there.
No, there's some great stuff there. Yeah, I think I might try and get hold of that skipping rope.
Yeah,
actually.
I think skipping for me. I might just go old school and get a bit of rope though.
and count.
Yeah. No, can't be trusted. Kieran, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
His fingers on the button, his ears to the ground. He's done a bit of Googling and he's had a nose around.
He's a detective wearing running shoes. Kerry McCarthy and his weekly running news.
Kerry, welcome back. Your finger is once more on the button. Your ear has returned to the ground. Pray tell, what has been catching your attention this week?
How long are you practicing that one for? Yeah, I quite like that. That's good.
Quite a while.
Good work. So I've got three bits of news this week, and they start off quite depressing and get kind of gradually more positive as it goes on. I thought I would do it that way around.
Yeah.
The first one for fans of track and field, you may have seen that American sprinter Christian Coleman is the latest athlete to face.
Yes.
I was going to say a drugs ban, but he hasn't actually been caught with any substances. But he has missed three drugs tests. In case you're wondering who he is, if you're not familiar with him, he won 100 metre silver at the London World Champs in 2017 ahead of Usain Bolt. That was Bolt's last race.
Right.
He got bronze in that race. He has a personal best of 9.79 seconds, which makes him the seventh fastest man in history. And he's the fastest man in the world this year. He ran 9.81 at a Diamond League meeting in California. So he's kind of like the standard bearer for that event. He's missed three drugs tests, which means that on the ADAMS system, as it's called, the Anti-Doping Administration and Management System, where athletes have to go on and they have to log where they're going to be for a minimum of 1 hour every day, just in case the testers want to turn up. It's apparently pretty user-friendly, and the athletes know, obviously, it's just part of their life while they're competing. Yeah. The testers have turned up on three occasions. He's not, you know, answered the door or whatever, and so now he faces a one-year ban. If he does, his hearing is on the 4th of September. If he is found guilty, he will miss the World Championships in Doha in October, and he will also miss the Olympics next year.
Yeah, it's massive, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, it's such an integral part of their day-to-day lives.
Exactly.
You can't really find... And the immediate speculation is that he's obviously doing something untoward because he's missing these things for a reason. Like, that's...
Well, I mean, our own Christina Hürriger got precisely a one-year ban for missing three tests. And the thing is, it's not three tests in 6 months or something like that. It's just cumulatively. Now, life gets in the way. Obviously, you can go onto the system, you can put in the next 6 months, but, you know, if a family member has fallen ill or something else happens and you have to do it, I can see completely how you would forget, obviously, but three times.
Yeah.
You would think the first time it happened, you'd be like, oh, bugger, I'd better sort that out for next time.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. Steve Cram said he felt less surprised than despair.
Right.
Which shows what
he
thinks.
Yeah, there was kind of weariness to it, wasn't
there? Yeah, just kind of like, oh, another one. But that's that. Moving on, David Rudisha, one of the heroes of London 2012, he was involved in a car crash, quite a serious car crash at the weekend, but happily, he's absolutely fine. He won the 800 metres in London 2012 and in 2016. He smashed the world record. I think a lot of people will remember this, listening to this now. He ran 1:40.91. And to put that in context, Andrew Asaji, the GB athlete, came eighth and last in that race, and his time would have been good enough for him to win the race in the previous two Olympics. That's how fast Rudisha was dragging everyone round.
Wow.
So he's a really special athlete. He's been blighted by injury since, but he's apparently on the comeback trail. He was driving in his SUV in Western Kenya on Saturday. A tyre burst. He went straight into the front of a bus. I mean, if anyone is minded to Google the images, they are, like, the car is just
harrowing,
like, completely concertinaed.
Yeah.
But miraculously, he was released from hospital a couple of hours later with only scratches.
That's mad. Yeah.
So hopefully it won't affect him, and he will be there representing Kenya at the World Championships in a couple of months' time.
It'd be great to see him back to his best, because he's such a beautiful runner when he's in full flow. Oh, it's amazing.
His style is just, I could watch that all day.
Yeah.
And finally, a subject that we've been talking about a little bit recently due to your own exploits, Rick, the 100-mile world record.
Oh, yes.
You just missed out on it when you took part in the North Downs Way 100 miler a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
What was your time again?
It was 23 hours and 4 minutes.
Which is bloody awesome, is it not, Hobbo? That is fantastic.
Yeah, but comparatively now too.
Well, 23 and a bit hours. There's an American athlete here called Zach Bitter who's just pipped you on Saturday with a time of 11 hours and 19 minutes.
Oh, God. He could have gone home and had, 11 hours sleep. Woke up and cheered me to the finish.
Mate, you could have gone clubbing.
He has
absolutely smashed it. So, to save you all getting your calculators out, that's a pace of 6:48-minute miles all the way around on average. And he did a negative split, apparently. So the last chunk, he was doing about 5.5-minute miles.
Yeah.
And if that's not enough to make it even more impressive, he did it inside on a track.
Yep. It was a track. Now, I read about this. It was a track that is
amazing.
Next to the... It runs around the outside of a speed skating facility.
Right.
So that the temperature inside the place is kept 12 degrees by the ice.
Oh, right, okay.
So it was perfect conditions.
Yeah.
Do you see it? So he's doing that. So it was a 434-meter track or something like that. He just did that.
As impressive as that is, I'd like to point out that the North Downs Way 100 is actually 103 miles. So who knows what would
have been. Well, he actually carried on running.
He did.
Unlucky.
And he broke the 12-hour record.
Yeah.
And ran 104 miles?
104.8 miles in 12 hours. So, yeah, you get to the end. You've got the world record. You think, shall I stop? No, sod it. I'll run for another 40 minutes and get another record.
Well.
And then he went home to his mum's and celebrated with a cheese buffet.
Which I respect.
Keeping it real. Yeah, good lad.
Kerry, thank you so much for the weekly running
news.
Yeah, great, great progress from depressing to optimistic.
Very
fantastic.
Much so. Yeah. You finish with cheese. Great.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. I'd like to say a huge thanks to our guest, Robbie Britton, and to Number 8 Studios in Soho, where this was recorded.
For more news, reviews, interviews, and much, much more from the wider world of running, please head over to runnersworld.com/UK. Please like and subscribe on iTunes. Maybe leave a little comment if you feel like it. And thanks to Acast, our hosting partner. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.